Beware of Angels, Chapter 1, Murder by Decree. It was the most difficult thing I had done in my life to please God. Sharon said as she looked me straight in the eye across a table in the woman's penitentiary at Salem, Oregon, on April 24, 1996. I silently waited for her to continue. As I walked out of the Greens house with the smoking gun in my hands, I realized I had accomplished only half of the assignment the angel of the Lord had ordered me to do. Lynn Green was dead with a shot in her chest and a second one in her head. Nathaniel, the Greens' 3-year-old little boy, had been shot in the face, and his father, David Green Jr., had managed to escape through a patio door with only a bullet in his back. Will God forgive me for having done such a poor job? I thought to myself, believing he wanted them all dead. Surely God will understand that I did the best job I could. Besides, I did a great job on Mike Lemke 3 days earlier when I put 3 bullets in him. Never again would demons be able to possess the man. What horrifying events had led this woman to become a murderer? A murderer who believed that she was doing the will of God. I had come to interview her to find out. Now she tried to explain the unexplainable. For a period of 5 years, I was affiliated with a small group of people involved with a deliverance ministry, she told me. They believed that they had evolved into a higher degree of standing with God and had received the ability to hear and see angels. During that time, we had heard that the time would come when God would require that we do many difficult things for Him. I had told God that I would do anything for Him, anything He wanted, but I never thought that the day would come when He would send an angel to tell me to destroy 6 individuals who had become possessed with demons. As we talked in a relaxed way about those years that had molded her and prepared her to kill for God, it deeply impressed me how Satan's angels had cleverly impersonated God's angels, convincing Lynn Green and the others that they brought special messages from God Himself to that little group. And the day came when by that very same means the demons were able to decree murder. Murder of someone who had been their own spokesperson. Lynn Green, a prophet? Many individuals had come to consider Lynn Green as some kind of prophet, because for a number of years she had claimed to see and hear angels. She supposedly had had numerous conversations with Jesus, who declared the little group to be His very special people on earth and told them that He would use them to accomplish wonders on behalf of His commandment-keeping people during the closing period of Earth's history. During one prayer meeting, Lynn received from what she believed was God's angel a message that was supposedly designed to encourage some of her followers. You are saddened because you wish not to remain here for so long a time, she said the being had told her. I will brighten your time here with these thoughts of the future. You, Joseph, with your bare hands will hold back the greatest wave from the sea for many to pass under. And Rachel will not burn as the flames rise above. And when the fire goes out, all will be amazed in that not a hair from her head will be scorched. Mrs. Green interpreted the cryptic message as meaning that she would be burnt at the stake like Joan of Arc. And you, Sharon, The shout of your voice will cause the greatest mountain to crumble on your enemies to protect the Lord's people. I see you in the future doing miraculous deeds by yourself, but yes, he that waits for you will draw near when you have been made new. Your angel that stands by you faithfully will give you the strength, knowledge, and wisdom for these things. Then the angel closed his visit by appealing to the group's pride. You here in this room know more of the future than any man, woman, or child in this world. Beware of the fortune-tellers in the world. As I listened to Sharon recount her bizarre tale, I realized that the whole experience of bright and beautiful angels telling them that they were God's elite on the face of the earth had been intended to have an intoxicating effect upon their minds. It blinded them to the errors Satan gradually used to lead them to disregard or reject such fundamental truths of the Bible as the state of human beings in death, and the fact that we are totally mortal and do not possess immortal spirits that go to heaven at death, or that can leave the body while we live on this planet and then travel to other worlds. These men and women were Seventh-day Adventists, but a fascination with angels had caused them to abandon much of their faith. Angels tricked them into accepting such fantastic accounts as this one Sharon told me. Dave Green Jr. went to his own planet that God gave him. It had miniature people and his favorite bonsai trees. Dave told us that he talked and visited with these little people, and they were taking care of his bonsai trees for him until he could someday be doing it himself. We were told that after Jesus took us to heaven, and we had the chance to visit our own planets and other worlds, we were informed that each of us could have whatever plants, trees, or animals we wanted on our planet. The allure of special gifts and experiences. Sharon recounted some of the gifts and abilities that they thought the angels had endowed the little group with. David Green, for example, thought he had the gift of interpreting dreams and the ability to be able to distinguish what percent of any music was from God or Satan. As a result, he bought his music accordingly. On my birthday, November 4, 1984, Sharon said, we went to the home of some friends to pray and ask the angels questions. After lunch, we all went into the living room, and most of us sat on the floor around Lynn. Then we talked to the angels one at a time as they showed up. The week before, an angel had told Lynn that we were to meet here and that I would receive my birthday gifts from heaven, something that some in the group had prayed that I would get. A girl named Cheryl had received a large cat that when you looked at it one way appeared to have stripes, but when it moved and you saw it from another angle, it looked like it had shimmering spots like a leopard. One person received a gift that turned out to be too much for him. In 1984, Sharon said, a member of the group named Charles was given the gift of reading minds. One time he sensed what someone was thinking about him, and he didn't like it. Upset, he asked God to remove the ability. All the experiences were intended to fascinate, to make the group feel that they knew things that no one else did, and that they had a special status with God. During the winter of 1984, for example, the Greens went skiing at Bend, Oregon. They told me, Sharon said, that while skiing down the slopes, a young boy angel went skiing with them. He was the youngest angel Lynn said she had ever seen or talked to. Seeing a boy angel may seem silly to some of my readers, but let me assure you that it was serious to them. The Greens believed that they had received special knowledge about the angel Gabriel. According to Sharon, Lynn said that Gabriel was a very strong, muscular-looking angel that stood not quite as tall as the other angels, but could if he wanted to. The angel of truth told Lynn that the angel's favorite height to stand is 7 feet, but they could make themselves whatever height they wanted. Also, they could grow their hair any length they desired. They could even change the color of the robes they wore if they were asked to wear a certain color. Who could resist wanting to know such unusual things? Surely to have God reveal them to you meant that you were someone special. Sharon Halstead told me how in 1984 the angel of truth had supposedly come to Lynn during a prayer and question session. Lynn started smiling and said to the being, "Truth, what do you have on your head?" He said he had just returned from a youth rally in Mexico, in which he had taken human form and had been a guest speaker. The people had given him a Mexican sombrero. He had it on so that Lynn could see his gift from the people of Mexico. That same year, one of David Green's angels would pose for him, either with his wings opened or folded, and David would sketch him. "The sketches I saw looked pretty good," Sharon told me. Lynn could see the angels posing for Dave also. During my research for this book, I read the 175-page black notebook David and Lynn Green had kept about their experiences. The police had removed it from their home after Lynn's murder. It stated that during a period of about 4 years, the Greens entertained in their home what they believed to be many angels. Angels that flattered and impressed and deceived. Satan led them step by step to accept the most bizarre things, things contrary to everything they had been taught from the Bible. Here are David's own words. "We have met and talked to many angels, and have made many friends whom we love very much, to date 160. He recorded the names of most of them. I will use much material from this black notebook in later chapters. Jesus supposedly visited the Greens and their followers. Sharon said that in 1984, her cousin Cheryl had moved from Fort Worth, Texas, to live with her in Grants Pass. She believed, like the rest of the group did. One day, Lynn came over to our house to pray and ask questions of Jesus. Jesus had given her a message that she was to come to our home because something special was to be given us this day. Lynn came over after lunch, and we, with 5 other persons, sat around on the floor and prayed for Jesus to come, speak to us, and let us know what it was he had for us. Many times, while at Dave and Lynn's place, an angel would appear, bringing a spiritual gift from heaven for someone in the group. In that way, many spiritual gifts were given to each of us. Lynn prayed for Jesus to come down to us. She saw Jesus when he appeared and said that he was very bright and beautiful and that thousands of angels surrounded him. When Jesus started talking, Lynn began to repeat to us the message he wanted us to have. I must say here that almost every message given to us by an angel or Jesus was written word for word by one of us as Lynn was speaking it. As for myself, there were times when, having written a message, I would read it back to Jesus or to an angel to make sure I had written it correctly with no words missing. This time, Jesus went around to each one of us after having talked and put the seal of God in our hands. Lynn said that it looked like a picture of the second coming of Christ, with all the holy angels bright and beautiful surrounding him. Because of his work, David wasn't there to receive his seal. But that evening after Lynn and he prayed, Jesus came and gave him his seal, and that made him exceedingly happy. Lynn was told that the seal of God on your forehead was the last and hardest seal to acquire. Some in the group had already received the seals in their hands and feet, and were waiting and longing for the last seal in the forehead. Once you had received the last seal of God, you were sealed for heaven and eternity with Christ, and you could never sin again. David Green Jr. received the gift of space travel, better known to most people as out-of-body experiences, and he referred to it as spiritual travel. One evening, we were all sitting on the floor. Dave stretched out and went to sleep. After a while, Lynn asked him, "Where have you been, Dave?" His reply was, "Oh, I went through the roof and was taken to another planet, where I saw many beautiful things." The Halstead family observed that at times when David was having one of his spiritual exercises, he would sit in the middle of the living room floor and talk in tongues. It reminds me of an incident that happened while I was affiliated with the Elite Secret Society of Spirit Worshippers I have described in previous books. The group's high priest commented one time that certain religious groups who practiced speaking in tongues did so under the influence of satanic spirits. These spirits, he claimed, actually caused the people to speak profanities to the Creator, and some actually blasphemed his name without being aware of what they were doing. In addition, he stated that all the excitement that takes place at some of their healing services came from the great master Satan and his angels. For about 5 years, those visiting angels charmed the people in Oregon with promises of wonderful things to come, winning their confidence and love. Then they began to lead them into activities forbidden by the Word of God. Under the pretense of getting them ready to help supply great numbers of Sabbath keepers with money and other things they would need during the time of trouble, they emphasized the fact that God owns our planet and everything on it. But they gave it a satanic twist, that God wanted them to begin transferring objects that belonged to spiritually lost individuals to places where they would be kept for times of need. The angels informed them that they would work with them in doing this special work for God and his people. David and Lynn Green's followers recognized that the last days would be troublesome times and assumed they would need special preparation. The false angels began with a thread of truth, and then they used it to weave a great lie. The Greens and their followers did not ask themselves how God would really sustain them through the period. They did not search the Bible and the writings of Ellen White. Rather, they jumped to the conclusion that their survival would depend on their own efforts. Instead of letting God supply what they needed when they needed it, they would stockpile material things beforehand, and they did not question whether the God of Scripture would employ the tactics the false angels led them into step by step. The supernatural beings told them to go to certain stores and take various objects and carry them out. The fallen angels assured them that no one would see the stolen merchandise, as the angels would make the objects invisible. No one would stop them. As a result, they were able to do the most unbelievable things, as the demonic angels worked in their behalf. For instance, a being instructed four of them to go to a certain store on a particular day and make a major haul of large objects. This took them 5 days to accomplish. Again the supernatural being assured them that no problems would arise, that no one would interfere with their activities. The angel stated that they would cause the men and women's physical appearance to change, as well as the color of their clothing, and that everything they stole would be made invisible. When everything went with great ease, the group began to enjoy working for God in this manner. In about 6 months, according to a police report, they acquired more than $50,000 worth of merchandise from various sources without anyone noticing. That particular experience served to convince them that without the shadow of a doubt, they were completely under the care of God's angels, and that nothing would happen to them because they were doing His will. The supernatural beings would predict something and it would happen, apparently confirming their truthfulness, power, and alleged origin from God. But a prophecy coming to pass does not mean that it is a prophecy from God. Satan can make false prophecies seem to be fulfilled. And when the Greens and their followers felt confident and secure in their calling, in reality Satan had blinded their minds, and without realizing it, they became involved in worshiping demons. The Apostle Paul described Satan's great power to deceive the human mind. "The god of this world hath blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ should shine unto them." 2 Corinthians 4:4. What happened to these men and women offers a powerful illustration of exactly that. One day a few of the Greens group assembled in one of the members' homes asking questions of a visiting angel whom Lynn Green declared to be radiant with heavenly glory. Someone then asked how one could see and talk to his or her guardian angel. The being told them, through Lynn, that guardian angels belonged to a different order of angels than it did, and that the two never talked to each other. God's angels in a heaven of love and closeness never speak to each other? Such a statement should have jarred their minds to the realization that something was extremely wrong. But the men and women accepted the angel's word as true. They had let themselves be conditioned to accept each additional error without questioning, and the day came when they sincerely believed that God wanted them to kill 6 individuals.